up call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And a good morning to you. We got the NCAA Tournament Final Four now all set as Gonzaga moves on and the UCLA upset Michigan. They'll be joining Baylor in Houston Saturday. We'll have the championship game and then we'll wrap this thing up. And some team will cut down the nets and they'll play one shining moment. And then the process will begin and analyze exactly what just happened over the last 3 weeks in a pandemic bubbled atmosphere in Indiana. Will we remember it with some level of asterisk next to it, right? Like Shelby Mast last week, when he was on the show, bracketwag.com, said he felt this tournament would have an asterisk. Would it if Gonzaga were to run the table and go unbeaten, joining Indiana as an unbeaten team to win the NCAA tournament in a 68-team field? First to ever do that, because Indiana did not have to go through that. The tournament wasn't that large back in 1976. Would we really slap an asterisk next to it because VCU had to cancel its game against Oregon early in the game and because we played it in the same state? Would we really do that to the Zags? God, I hope not. I'll be honest with you. I hope we don't do that to any of the teams that cut down the nets on Monday. I really don't. I think asterisks are dangerous in sports because it gives you a sense that it somehow can be dismissed. That what the accomplishment you just saw can somehow be erased in the memory books is not legitimate. When in actuality, it probably is one of the most incredible things a college basketball team could do, regardless of the environment. You may not like the fact that a bunch of non-conference games got canceled in December, but were you paying attention anyway? So Gonzaga didn't have to run through a whole bunch of people that they would have ran through no matter when they played them at a time of the year where we were so busy with other sports we wouldn't have been watching anyway. And now somehow we should be saying, if Gonzaga wins this, we should be telling them it's not really legit because you didn't play the Idaho State on December 18th in a game somewhere in some tournament in Hawaii or, I don't know, wherever. It's not fair to the teams that are participating. UCLA could be making one of the historic runs as an 11 seed, and you're going to tell me maybe afterwards we should put a little star next to it because it was held in one state? Please do not do that to this tournament. Good, the bad, and the dumb next.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser!
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb, the Wednesday edition. Let's get right to it. The good of the day.
Free burritos.
Where, when, and how?
And this is not April Fool's prank. Thursday, tomorrow, you could win a free burrito from Chipotle.
You can?
Or a cool $100,000.
Okay. Is it and or is it, what's the catch here?
Well, you remember that guy, we talked about him a while back. His name is Stephen Thomas or Stephen Thomas. He's the founder and CEO of Coil. He was the guy who lost hundreds of millions of dollars in Bitcoin because he couldn't remember his password.
That's right.
Well, he's holding a contest and having Chipotle help him out. Guests or Chipotle customers can try to guess his passcode.
Oh, I don't know if this promotion is going
to
work.
And, you know, you get 10 tries to try it. And if you don't succeed, you'll get you'll probably end up getting a voucher for free burritos.
Okay, but doesn't he have a certain amount of chances before he's locked out permanently? I thought that was part of his story.
I would think, right? So I don't know.
What made his story compelling wasn't that he forgot his password. What made his story compelling was he only had like 10 chances before he was locked out.
Yeah, forever.
Forever. So he was being really careful. So how would people know, like, not everybody can provide 10?
That is a great question.
All right. So because to me, that was the thing that drew me to, I don't care about a billionaire guy. Because eventually he'll find it, right? If he was given unlimited chances, Eventually, he could set up a computer in the corner that does every possible combination on a
ever,
you know, multiple times per second and just let it run 24 hours a day until it lands on it. But if you say you got 10 guesses and after the 10th, you ain't getting this money, then that becomes like James Bond-ish, right? That becomes crazy, like a supervillain would do.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you find a way to hack into it. I don't know. I really don't know.
So he's going to give explain you 100,000 of his
What happens is say you guess it correctly, right? You'll get $100,000 in free burritos and $100,000 in Bitcoin.
Okay, that works.
But if you miss out on all 10 chances, I'm thinking Chipotle is giving you, if you're one of the lucky ones who gets to participate, Chipotle is giving you a free burrito anyways. And it just happens to be April 1st, just happens to be National Burrito Day.
I think you deserve more money than $100,000 because I think the odds of getting his password correct, not knowing anything about him, is greater than like picking a perfect bracket in the tournament, which is like in the quadrillions. How in the world is somebody going to guess his password?
I have no idea.
I mean, every number, symbol, combination that's available, I mean, if you land that, you should get a lot more than $100,000. You're really breaking the odds. But yeah, I'll take the free burrito for trying.
What they predict is by the end of the contest, 10,000 fans will win one free burrito, 50 fans will win $500 in Bitcoin, and 3 fans will win $25,000 in Bitcoin.
Okay, that works.
But yeah, free burrito. And all you got to do is just try to guess some billionaire's passcode.
There you go.
It's an easy way to get a burrito.
All right, what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day is, you know, Tony, you and I have stood on the soapbox, and we've warned people for years not to mess with robots.
Don't mess with robots.
Not to mess with aliens. And curses. We have talked about curses.
Right.
I don't know if you've heard of the curse of the pharaohs. It's an old curse.
Yeah. I think when you dig them up as a mummy, something bad happens to you. Something like that.
Well, that is one of the reasons floating around social media right now of why the Suez Canal was blocked is because of the curse of the pharaohs, the curse of Ramses II.
Was that ship containing an item of his something archaeological?
No, Egypt has had a run of bad luck recently.
All right.
And it all started with them saying, hey, we got 22 mummies that we're going to ship from Egypt to various museums around the world.
Well, let's be honest. It started when the pharaoh wouldn't let the Hebrews go after Moses told him to.
True.
Let's just make that clear.
But
you don't get 10 plagues very often in a society.
Since that announcement was made, people on social media found the correlation that almost immediately after they made the announcement, the Suez Canal was blocked, and there was train crash in Egypt that did kill a bunch of people.
Wow.
Plus, there was a bridge that collapsed. The bridge that they were building fell under construction. And there's been a few fires of recent.
Okay.
I think we might be onto something. And that's why, you know, if you find a tomb, you just leave it there.
Just leave it alone.
You don't touch it. You don't mess with it.
Just go, hey, be good.
I would like to. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of far-fetched. You know, I mean, the reasoning they said that the Suez Canal was blocked was because all of a sudden a huge gust of wind pushed the ship
into the bank. Yeah, a gust of wind caused by the mummy's spirit.
Exactly. It was a dust storm that came through, and all I can picture now is that dust storm in the mummy where the mummy's face appeared.
Right.
Remember that Brendan Fraser flick?
Where he was in the plane?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
And so
imagine.
That's what I imagine now is that's what blew the ship sideways.
I think I've said this on the show before. When I was a kid, I wanted to be an archaeologist until I found out what archaeologists really do.
Yeah.
Right? Like they really spend most of their time with like a little paintbrush, brushing off, digging a little paintbrush.
Or in a classroom teaching snotty kids that, you know, hey, digging up stuff is pretty cool.
It's not really as exciting as the movies in Indiana Jones made it out to be.
Yep.
But nevertheless, I always wondered what it would be like if you found a tomb and you heard about curses. Would you believe in that stuff, or would you go, nah, I'm taking this stuff to a museum?
Like going for
Indy it. Would. Yeah.
Exactly. Going for it. It's history. Everyone wants to see history.
Everyone wants to see this vase of organs. You know, all that good stuff. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day, surprise, surprise, is the NCAA.
What did they do now?
Well, we've always highlighted how the NCAA treats student athletes with respect and kindness, and they treat them pretty much like they're their own kids.
Right.
Oregon State lost in the Elite Eight.
Right.
By the time they got back to the hotel, they were told, hey, you guys have already been checked out. You're catching this red-eye flight back home at 1:15 a.m.
Why did they do that? They wouldn't let them stay one more night?
By comparison, somebody did point out that the Arkansas team that lost, they were able to fly out at 10 a.m. the next day.
And they got to stay in the hotel?
Yeah, they got to stay in the hotel. So I don't know.
This is an NCAA thing. This wasn't a school thing. Where this the school said, "Hey guys, we should get home. We got a flight. Let's just take it."
I guess the NCAA is the one that books the hotel the flights.
That's sad.
The flight, and maybe was it the only flight out of Indianapolis was at 1:15 in the morning?
That reminds me of that movie, That Thing You Do with Tom Hanks, where he told that kid, "Well, you're leaving the hotel today."
Yeah.
When the kid was like, "You don't seem to have a band," he goes, "You're leaving the hotel." That seems like. You don't have a tournament anymore. You're leaving the hotel.
You're done.
Goodbye.
No, we're not paying for one
Thanks
more night.
Thanks for participating, but it's over. When we say it's over, we don't mean like, oh, we're really sad you lost. I mean, here's your suitcase. Get the hell out of here.
I'm just wondering if it was that the 1:15 flight out was the cheap one.
It's
like,
possible.
Hey, we can save $50 per kid, per person, if we book them on the 1:15 rather than the 10 a.m.
I worked in minor league basketball for 2 years. I'm not kidding when I tell you this. If we had a flight from when I worked in Vegas, if we had a flight from Vegas to Albuquerque, because we had a team in New Mexico, if it was cheaper to fly to Iceland and then Albuquerque, we would have taken it. Like if somehow an airline was like, I don't know why we're doing this, but it's much cheaper to go to Albuquerque if you fly halfway around the world to Iceland, turn around and go back to New Mexico. My general manager would have been like, sign us up. We need 21 tickets. Get it to us right now. Guys, this is going to take 2 days, but enjoy the flight. Get off at Reykjavik and enjoy whatever the heck is there for 20 minutes before we send you back west.
No, you got an 8-hour layover, but realistically, it's only about 4 because of the time change.
Seriously, we would have absolutely signed up for that tomorrow. Like, no problems whatsoever. Like, we would have players going, can I drive? No. You're going to Iceland to Albuquerque. It's probably the same thing here. They're like, what would be the flight tomorrow to Corvallis? Oh, they're going on the 1:15.
All right,
so bye-bye. See you later. Pack them up, guys. Get them out of here.
We're routing them through Bozeman, Montana first.
Right, exactly. So, good luck.
So, yeah,
good luck to you,
Beavers.
Goodbye.
I mean, how harsh is that? You know, Arkansas lost a good game. You know, it was a close one. And,
sleep
I mean, not
on
Arkansas,
it,
Oregon State.
Have the hotel breakfast in the morning.
Yeah, that's what you're supposed to do, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they weren't planning on taking the sights and sounds of Indianapolis that morning.
Oregon State was already checked out.
Oregon State was checked out, home in bed. Before the news hit, like some of the world that they lost.
Oh, that's amazing. That is really harsh, man. That is devastating.
1:15 a.m. That must have been a great flight.
Oh God, can you imagine? I don't sleep good on planes. Heck, I mean, I don't sleep good on, no matter when I go. I remember the one time my wife said, "Here, take this," and I was like, "Okay," it was like a pill, like a sleeping pill. And I took it, and I was out like a light for the flight, and it was awesome because I fell asleep, woke up, we landed, but. I can't sleep on planes very well.
I'm the same way.
I just can't. I just don't know why. I just don't get comfortable. Even when I am comfortable, I just can't. And so any time that if my career or vacation or out of necessity, somehow I need to fly to Australia for whatever reason, I worry that I'm just not going to rest at all.
Well, I figured if
I'm on that flight for 18 hours going.
If I'm doing one of those long, long flights, if I was to fly to Australia, I need to book a flight where you have a bed.
Yeah, right.
You know, or
you
need, one of those
where you can lean it all the way back.
Yeah, or one of those really long chairs and you've almost got like your own little pod, your own little area. That's the only way I'm going to do it. And I know those tickets are expensive, so that leads me to believe I'm probably not going to Australia anytime soon.
I know, because I wouldn't be able to do a coach flight with, sitting in the middle seat of the aisle going, doing this for half a day, and almost a full day?
Yeah.
I'm not doing this.
I'm not doing that.
So, God bless. All right, that's a good, the bad, and the dumb. Coming up next, pro days. One really went well, one not so well, but the one that really went well may have been a little too over the top. We'll get to that next as we continue with the wake-up call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Steve Gardner is going to join us USA Today. I like Steve Gardner a lot. I know I said that earlier. We really are going to go through the baseball season. It starts tomorrow afternoon. A lot of questions. I think one of my primary questions is going to be right out of the gate, and I'm kind of curious as your thoughts on this, Ron. We had such a shortened season last year, and in the end, a team that probably would have won it with 162 games did win it. The Dodgers were loaded, and they ended up winning it all.
Yeah.
But, like, is Tampa Bay 162 teams good? I mean, they just lost Blake Snell. Right?
I don't think anymore. They might have been good last year.
Would they have won it over 162 games, or would the Yankees, would they have just caught them because they're loaded with talent, and in the end, it's a long season?
I think the issue with the Yankees, I mean, they have great talent. They just can't stay healthy.
They can't stay healthy at all.
I mean, how many times, it doesn't matter if it was 162 games or the shortened, 60-80 game version we had last summer.
Right.
Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton don't play full seasons anymore.
I'm really want his thoughts on Tony La Russa, who I still cannot believe.
And you still need a trek.
I know.
I don't know. Summer's coming up.
Can't believe he's going to be in the dugout for the White Sox in 2021.
When's their first home game? Aren't you supposed to be there?
Yeah, I know. What a weird scenario that is. The Astros, right, should be back running, rolling along.
And are we going to get a lot of banging trash cans for the Astros
this year? Yeah, I mean, think so.
I know we've seen a little hint of it during spring training. You know, we talked about it recently.
Yep.
Where at first we were like, I don't know, that's old news. They missed their chance. And then it's like, well, they didn't really miss their chance. They never got their chance. So are they going to be taking their chances this year?
Good point. Nolan Arenado with the St. Louis Cardinals, are they the best in the Central? It's a lot of questions with Steve Gardner coming up.
They have to be, right? Because the Cubs look like they're imploding with great team from 2016.
O'Reilly Auto Parts is here to keep your car on the road with the right parts advice from their professional parts people and their free loaner tool program. This is pretty cool. There's no need to purchase a tool if you're just going to use it once. Your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store has more than 80 specialty tools available to rent for your next repair. Refundable deposit required at the time of rental. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today. Ask about their free loaner tool program or visit O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. So Justin Fields had a fantastic pro day yesterday at Ohio State. So fantastic that people are saying it's the greatest pro day in the history of pro days. One scout anonymously said this was the best quarterback workout he has ever seen. Justin Fields throwing the ball around in Columbus. Okay, what will that mean for the draft, right? So if you've got Trevor Lawrence he's the new number one. If you got Trevor Lawrence going number one, are the Jets, who were impressed by Zach Wilson's pro day, because I thought that was the greatest pro day that was ever in the history.
Well,
amazing how things change, right?
It was. I mean, Zach Wilson should have gone second.
Until Justin Fields hit the field. Now this could mean that Justin Fields could go number two to the Jets, depending on how they evaluate. Whatever further evaluation is, you know, whether he does a private workout for them or whether he, you know, does a Zoom interview and impresses them more than Zach Wilson, whatever, the Jets could be getting this kid out of Ohio State, Justin Fields, and Zach Wilson could fall to the 49ers. Either way, there's three quarterbacks going 1, 2, 3 in the draft.
All right, quick question for you.
Yes.
Did Urban Meyer recruit Justin Fields?
I'm going to say yes.
So
I think he did.
Why can't we throw that conspiracy out there that he might go number one,
That's
right?
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Just saying.
Yeah. That's true. That could be.
Would the NFL draft just implode if that was happening?
Oh, God. That's crazy. Are you kidding?
I think...
if I'm Shad Khan, I fire him immediately after that.
Well, I was going to say that. If that was to happen, I think Mel Kiper walks off the set and quits.
Never returns. I tried to figure this thing out for 30 years. I can't do it. 30-plus years.
He looked good. I mean, I don't know if there was a little bit of nervousness with Mac Jones. I mean,
yeah, he didn't look good.
Sure, on the one hand, you had Shanahan and who's the GM for the Niners?
John Lynch
standing behind him. But then when you look over your left shoulder, you see Belichick talking to Saban. That's got to be a little nerve-wracking.
You can only imagine. I got to give these kids credit, right? They're still young guys, right? They're still young men. And they get this day where a lot. Look, you know, Mac Jones is going to get drafted, right?
Yes,
so
he
he's
is.
Not, he knows he's going to be a professional football player. It's not that level of pressure. Like, I've done auditions at radio stations where they're like, come in and do a show. You're up. You're one of three finalists for the afternoon. I've done that in my career. And that's nerve wracking because you feel like you got to nail it or you don't get the gig. That's it. You know, you don't get, it's not like I went there and they were like, yeah, you're in, but we just don't know where we're going to put you.
Right.
Right. Like, I either get the gig or I go back to looking for another gig. He knows he's going to the pros. So there's not the pressure of, do I become a professional football player or do I go to dental school? Right. He's going to be a professional football player, but you want to be one of the top selected guys. So you are under pressure to perform on a level where you get top dollar, top signing money. You're one of the top five picks. You're impressing quarterback. You're impressing the teams enough for them to go, hey, Mac Jones is now in the running to be the third overall pick, right? That kind of conversation. And, you know, things get away from you. It's a one-shot deal. It's not like they're going to come down for 4 days and you can figure it out. It's got to be nerve-wracking. When you see Zach Wilson and Justin Fields, even though people say, pro days, they're in comfortable environments, they're throwing to receivers they know, they're in their own place, they're, you know, they, it's so different. It's still pressure. I don't care where it is. It's still pressure. There's a lot on the line. To see Wilson and Fields put up the kind of performance that made scouts go, I can't remember a quarterback I've seen like
well,
this.
Well, I mean, you could almost make the correlation that Zach Wilson's performance prompted the Niners to trade up to the third pick.
Right. Yeah, very
because
true.
Because it was around that, you know, he's having his pro day, and then all of a sudden Niners go, oh, we need the third pick, like immediately, now.
Right. Exactly. So, but Jones still has a chance to meet teams, throw again somewhere, you know, maybe throw a little workout somewhere. He's still got a chance to do it.
Teams invite them in for a private workout?
Yeah, there's a way to do it. They'll be having it in. So he can do some stuff. Fields even said at the end of his, he's like, he doesn't want this to be seen as one shot, familiar circumstances. He was like, I'll go anywhere, anywhere they want. I'll throw any day they want. I'm going to show them that I can do this consistently. I can do this anywhere, anytime.
God,
that's the right mentality.
What if, like, Justin Fields or Zach Wilson or even Mac Jones is better than Trevor Lawrence?
I know. Hey, listen, we're throwing the same superlatives at Trevor Lawrence we did Andrew Luck.
Yeah.
But we don't know. We don't know. I mean, this league has a way of humbling you. This league has a way of getting to the best. Look, let's not forget, there was a period of time in Peyton Manning's early career where we were like, this guy throws too many picks, and he audibles all the time, and he's nuts. But you kind of felt like eventually he'd get it. Maybe Trevor Lawrence struggles in Jacksonville the way whoever plays for San Francisco, let's just say it's Justin Fields, doesn't in San Francisco, right? Like, there's just different system, different coaches, better defense, better opportunities to win games than Jacksonville may have in the first early years. That's what's troubling about, in Luck's case, they were a playoff team under Manning. Manning gets hurt. They miss a whole year. They get the number one pick. But the elements were there to be decent. They just didn't have a quarterback the year they stunk. Jacksonville's terrible. They got rid of all their players. They're rebuilding. Lawrence is going to be part of that rebuilding. And you can get beat up pretty badly your first couple of years doing that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, enough that it doesn't shake your confidence, let's say, but it's enough to be like, yeah, that, I mean, I was hit 37 times this season, right? That some, 38 times in one game, that kind of thing, where it's just like, I'm constantly getting hit all the time.
Well, I mean,
in this league,
you can do this by looking at the play of how Deshaun Watson plays versus how Patrick Mahomes plays.
Right, right.
You know, Patrick Mahomes has had a great offensive line, is able to do things that blow us away and, you know, win an MVP or win a Super Bowl. Deshaun Watson is trigger happy.
Right.
Yeah. He gets rid of that ball within like a second or 2 seconds just because he knows he's about to get killed.
So we shall see. But I do know this. I hope Justin Fields gets a chance to do it again, because if he can do it second time in a row, then it's the greatest workouts in the history of mankind. Because what they said about him yesterday was really, really, really on top notch. Steve Gardner will join us next as we preview the baseball season that starts tomorrow next on Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, the last time we saw baseball, meaningful baseball, was when Los Angeles beat Tampa Bay in Texas. But let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at Progressive.com today. Spring training's over. It's time to start the Major League Baseball season. Steve Gardner, USA Today, helping us preview all of that. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, Tony. How about yourself?
I'm great. Listen, let's talk about last season. 60 games, short. It was tight. A lot of doubleheaders, a lot of seven-inning doubleheaders. Let's all get it in. In the end, the best team that people thought going into the season won. But was there any sort of way, is there any team that you saw last year that was a surprise enough that makes you think 2021 under a full season could carry that momentum into this year?
Well, I think we saw the Padres and how good they can be last year and into the playoffs. And I think they're the second best team, maybe even in baseball, but certainly in the National League, in my mind, to the Los Angeles Dodgers. So, I mean, those Padres, they got the experience of being in the chase last year, of being in the playoffs and getting a little bit of a taste of that. I think that could make them certainly a much stronger team and help them to carry over that momentum into this year. And, you know, maybe they do give the Dodgers a run in the NL West. And certainly, if they don't, they can see them in the playoffs again.
There's some other teams in the National League outside of those two. Atlanta, again, third. They went to the playoffs the third straight year coming into this season. And the Mets, evaluate those two teams as realistic NL champs.
Oh, sure. Atlanta is stacked. And, you know, if the Padres aren't the second best team on paper, then the Braves are, because you've got an MVP and another, you know, Freddie Freeman's the reigning MVP. Ronald Acuna Jr. could win a couple of those before he's all done. The offense is great. They got Marcelo Zuna back. They re-signed him. And then the pitching staff a little bit retooled, but still, you've got some young guys like an Ian Anderson who basically came on last season. We only got a glimpse of how good he can be. So, you know, as you were saying, a full season's worth of Ian Anderson. Wow. You know, that's I'm excited to see that. And so you throw that in with Charlie Morton. You know, they picked up Drew Smyly. They picked up for their pitching staff. The Braves are going to be very strong this year. And the Mets, again, the best player in all of baseball to change teams is Francisco Lindor, and he makes the Mets stronger on offense, makes them stronger on defense, and they went out and they spent money, maybe not so much on free agents as some of their fans might have liked, but they may spend it on an extension for Francisco Lindor. And most important, I think, for them this season is they spend it on guys who could add some depth to that team. And that's where the Mets have really fallen short in previous seasons and have disappointed, is they haven't had guys to step in when others got hurt. And I think they do this year.
Yeah, let's stay on the Mets for a second here, because this is a team that every year we're like, hey, Pete Alonso and Michael Conforto, Jacob DeGrom, of course, and Noah Syndergaard, and this talent, were they a Francisco Lindor-level player from being that next-level championship good? Were they good before and this makes them better, or were they really missing a Francisco Lindor?
So, I mean, they had a very good core on that team, but I think, number one, Lindor pulls everything together, you know, for offense and defense. And then when they can build around him and continue to build around him to where, you know, Jeff McNeil's a fantastic player, but he's not going to carry you for weeks at a time. And I think that's where Lindor can provide that. And Alonso, because of the nature of his game, there's a lot of swing and miss. And so he could get cold for stretches. They couldn't weather that last season. I think they can now with Francisco Lindor. And, you know, to add the pieces, the Jonathan Villars and Kevin Pillar, those kinds of guys around them, I think makes this Mets team a lot more formidable.
All right, let's go to the Central, where Milwaukee and St. Louis, the Cardinals get Nolan Arenado in that blockbuster trade. Is this a two-team race? Is there anybody else that's going to make a little noise in that division? That's always been a fun division to watch because it seems like there's a whole bunch of things going on, so many teams in contention.
Yeah, until the Arenado trade, nobody really in the Central had made any kinds of bold moves to get better. And I think that makes things a lot more interesting. I mean, the Reds lost a couple of players, especially, you know, Trevor Bauer, the Cy Young Award winner. Yeah. So they fell back a little bit. And, yeah, I think that that division can go in any number of different directions. I like the Brewers over the Cardinals, but still, when you add a player the caliber of Arenado who can provide you offense, you know, a platinum glove at third base, that's going to be huge for them and their pitching staff. So, yeah, I think any one of four teams can win that Central.
All right, we know the Yankees last year plagued with injury problems. Tampa Bay beat them straight up almost every time they played during the regular season. The Rays would beat the Yankees, ended up winning, and winning the American League. The Rays lose Blake Snell. The Yankees need to stay healthy. But when healthy, how good are the Yankees?
Oh, the Yankees could be a juggernaut. But again, you know, that has been the big question. You know, can they be healthy? And the funny thing is, I mean, when you're the Yankees and you want to rebuild your starting rotation, you go out and pick up a Jameson Taillon and a Corey Kluber, both guys who hardly pitched. You know, Kluber had, I think, what, one game or something like that last year, and Taillon missed the entire season. You add some more injury questions to the mix. They're playing with fire a little
right.
bit, but otherwise, if those guys are in good shape, and it looks like, for the most part, they're going to be ready to start the year, and you can have Aaron Judge healthy and Giancarlo Stanton healthy. Now Luke Voit has an injury, so, I mean, the injuries keep coming. But that Yankee team, if everybody is 100%, is dreadfully scary for the opponents in the AL.
With Blake Snell leaving Tampa Bay, but Randy Arozarena was so good last year, are the Rays still a threat? How do we evaluate them now?
I think, you know, anytime you count out Tampa Bay, you're doing it at your own risk.
That
because
is so
they
true.
Figure out ways to win.
You're right amazing. On the money.
I mean, had a bottom five payroll last year, and they make the World Series.
Right.
So it goes against all convention. I think these Rays are still going to be very good and still a playoff team. I mean, they platoon well. They get the most out of the players and the skills that they have, and they figure out a way. And to take Blake Snell off of that team, you're certainly putting a big hole in that rotation, but somehow they make a way to fill that in. They find a way to fill that in with, you know, players that they pull off. I mean, Chris Archer, is he going to come in and be anywhere close to what he was back when he was with the Rays earlier in his career? You know, their closer, quote unquote, Nick Anderson, who had just a fabulous regular season last year, going to miss half of this year. They've got to fill in the bullpen as well. I mean, it's going to take all of their creativity and their resources, but I still think they somehow or another are able to do that and be a playoff team this season.
I still can't believe Tony La Russa is going to be managing in 2021. It's amazing to me. I thought that would not happen, but it is, and the White Sox are one of the top teams, at least coming in on paper, but they did suffer a major injury. How do the White Sox look?
Yeah, Eloy Jimenez was the heart, part of the heart of that order. I mean, obviously, Jose Abreu was last year's MVP, but Jimenez, I think, you know, a 30, 40 potential homer bat taken out of the middle of that lineup will definitely hurt the White Sox. And, yeah, the one thing they do have that's kind of the X factor is the young guy, Andrew Vaughn, you know, third overall pick in 2019. Did not play last year with the White Sox. He was at the alternate camp for the entire season, but fantastic potential, great plate discipline, and a power hitter as well. The thing is, the White Sox are, he's usually a first baseman, and he was kind of penciled in as their DH for this season. But now with Jimenez out, Tony La Russa's got him playing out in left field. I think this is going to be a fascinating experiment to see how long he can continue to do that, if he can continue to do that. And, yeah, he could be somebody who could be a difference maker there for the White Sox. I mean, elsewhere, they have just so much. They ooze talent everywhere, and young talent at that, you know, outside of Abreu. This is going to be a team that They have the ace in Lucas Giolito. They traded for Lance Lynn this offseason, an outstanding starter and a fabulous number two for them. This is definitely a team to watch, and the dynamic of the young core of this team and the veteran presence of a Hall of Fame manager who hasn't been in the game on the field for 10 years, I think that may be the storyline of the year for me in Major League Baseball.
Wow. Steve Gardner, USA Today, as we do some baseball previews. All right, one final thought about 2020 and going into 2021. Will fans see some similar setups? Are there anything that 2020 had to bring us because of the shortened season that we are carrying over into 2021?
Well, the seven-inning doubleheaders and the extra innings experiments that we had last year in the name of keeping everyone safe, they're continuing. So this is, it won't be exactly the same as we saw in 2019. I'm really not a fan of either one. I mean, I'm more of a traditionalist in that regard.
Yeah.
So I want more baseball, and I don't really care if games last 4 hours, if it's compelling baseball. Now, there are other things about on the field and the fact that so few balls are being put in play. I get that. These changes, you know, with the doubleheaders and the extra inning, that doesn't affect the game, you know, how the game is played and how the ball is in play and all of that. So I'm really not a big fan of that, but we'll see. Hopefully, you know, we don't have the same health concerns as we go into the season, as more players are vaccinated, as fans are vaccinated. We're going to have more, you know, larger crowds now as the season progresses. I think that's going to be certainly more fun for everyone involved. So it will look a little bit like last year at the start, but I'm hoping that it looks more like the season that we expect and we're looking forward to as we get into the summer.
So exciting with so much different movement during this offseason. Really appreciate it, Steve, as always, and we will catch you down the road as the season progresses. Thank you, my friend.
You bet. Great catching up, Tony.
You got it. That's Steve Gardner, USA Today Baseball Preview. Again, a lot of stuff this offseason, and yeah, it was short. It was quick, and we did get a good World Series, or at least a good matchup. Tampa Bay was a fun story, and the Dodgers were a juggernaut. But now we're back. We're back to playing these full games, full seasons, and all of the things that come about them. And, you know, health is a concern for a couple of teams, but it all starts tomorrow with some games as regular season gets kicked off in baseball. That's all coming up as we continue with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue along with Wake Up Call, SportsMap Radio. Jake Asman Show is coming up next. This hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage to fit your life? Rocket can. Yeah, I'm excited for the baseball season to start. Baseball, this is how baseball works for me, and I'm not going to lie. I love baseball, but I get really into it, and then it kind of, okay, we're in a rhythm now, and games are coming, and teams winning and losing, and then I kind of pay attention in June, and I kind of kick it up again, like late August, and then I really watch it as it gets down to the wire towards the postseason. Like, I have these lulls,
I think that's how we all do it.
I mean, like football, I stay up with it, you know, it's like consistent. But baseball, I do the same thing with the NBA. Like the opening games, I get into it. Then the trade deadline, I want to see what teams are. And then I kind of really get into it in March when we were heading to the April playoffs. This year is obviously different. Baseball is kind of like that. So the first couple of weeks, I'm like, I want to see how Nolan Arenado does. You know, I want to see how the Yankees look coming out of spring healthy. I want to see how the Mets look. But then by May, I'm like, okay, we've caught a rhythm now, and let's see where that goes.
Well, you don't want to miss a moment when the first 2 weeks of the season, you want to see. I'll watch all the games.
Yeah, that's right.
Because we haven't had it in so long. And and it is also, you know, like the change of the seasons, too. Because, you know, baseball is bringing in spring, warmer weather. And it's like, all right, you know, we're finally past the winter.
Yeah.
And we start looking forward to backyard barbecues again and, you know, sitting on a patio outside and getting eaten by bugs.
Right, exactly. So that's kind of the way. But he's right about, you know, I am a traditionalist. I don't like the seven-inning doubleheader, but I'm okay with it. Like if
that's
we get
the only
more,
one I'm fine with.
If we get more doubleheaders, and this is the only way to – like if the Players Association said, hey, man, when we discuss this again, we like the seven-inning doubleheader thing. We'll do more doubleheaders for you if you want, but they got to be like this, then I'm cool with it. The runner at start the extra innings is
stupid.
It's stupid. I think that's stupid.
I hate it.
I understand, but it's still – even with the pandemic, you didn't convince me that it was necessary.
No, like I can get behind seven inning doubleheaders because that's a long day of baseball. You know, 14 innings. I mean, and you imagine if one of those goes into extras. I can't stand. Let's just put a runner on second and see what happens.
You know, people tell me all the time, like, your job is great. You get to cover sports. And I go, you haven't sat in a cold, freezing, windows open press box in Colorado watching the Rockies and Pirates play a doubleheader where you had to watch every at bat. Like, you couldn't just zone out on your computer. I was logging pitches and thing for, I was freelancing for a service, and I was like, this is awful. I was like, it's terrible baseball. It's freezing cold. It's long. But no, Seth, you're right. If this is doubleheaders are cool, and you can get more games in, and they're kind of fun for families. But seven, it'd be fine. But some of the rule, runner on.
But you know, the one that they didn't do that needed to do is universal DH. Come on,
universal DH should have done that. Should have done that. All right, we'll see you tomorrow. Jake Asman show's coming up next. Thanks for joining us. We continue along. It's Wake Up Call. Tony D, Ron Cole.